the most wonderful time of the year. With the kids jingle belling and everyone telling you be of good cheer. It's the most wonderful time of the year.
That's the most wonderful time of the year, sung by Johnny Mathis. On the Now This Is Christmas compilation soundtrack. You can listen to it wherever you stream your music. This is available on iTunes with the link in the podcast notes or wherever you listen to music. And that's how I love to start this show. Hi, I'm your host, Felicia Baxter, and welcome to Tinfro is Reading and Reflections on the holiday season. We are entering a difficult and dangerous time, emotionally fraught with anxiety and dread. People are so afraid of change or differing views and perspectives, threatening their tenuous reality of their elevated place and superior views of themselves are threatening to end by some unseen threat. Guess what? It's really not all that crucial, y'all. The foundations are sinking. You can see the cracks. We should strive to be better versions of ourselves, seeking truths and positivity, dreaming of something better, a peaceful existence. Peace is not boring unless you are a drama junkie, and I'm not. With every blog post, melanated musings about COVID, science, my eating, reading, listening choices, watching and writing, I seek each creative production to be better than the last. Seek, dream, hustle, repeat, always. And I thank you for listening, because this is the most wonderful time of the year. What a goofy way to start this part of the episode. That is Deck the Halls by Otmar Liebert from the Now That's Christmas compilation album. I wanted to reflect on melanated excellence, and starting this part of the podcast is very simply my reflection or reflecting on the essence. Covers. Have y'all seen it? I was hip to this with another podcast I listened to, Ratchet and Respectful, where Essence basically did us proud, as always, with feature covers of Simone Biles, Lizzo, and Nicole Hannah-Jones. They talk about radical self-care. I'm reflecting on that. My reflections on mindfulness in the last several weeks have been pretty much reflecting on protecting your mind, protecting your peace. That's all a part of self-care. Simone Biles, most notable for her taking a step back from the Olympics. She's the greatest of all times. They still try to figure out how to judge her for her opulence and her crazy stunts, trying to make it equal when it's not equal. She's just absolutely talented. And if you want to represent blackness and beauty and melanin up to perfection, it seems that Essence has figured out how to do that in spades. Between Simone Biles and Lizzo, amazing voice, a beautiful weirdo. Obviously, she loves herself, but I'm sure she's done the work to be able to love herself. Also, Hannah Nicole Jones of the 1619 Project and her flight from her alma mater, UNC, because she had to go where she could be appreciated and celebrated. And she's gone to a publication that celebrates and highlights melanin to perfection. The podcaster, Demetria L. Lucas, basically said it beautifully. You can listen to her one of her latest podcasts about Simone Biles and how the more mainstream and white publications of Vogue, they tried, but they did not light her correctly. They did not dress her appropriately for her petite frame. But if you are in the business of black excellent representation in print, it seems that Essence has this in spades. They know what they're doing over there. The stylists, they have highlighted and made already beautiful women even more beautiful, because this is definitely a celebration of melanated and black excellence, and I love it. I'm also looking at how Simone Biles, I follow her on Instagram too. She has 6.9 million followers, and she's using this and she's posted this. I can see this, the use of this as a positive image on social media where we have so much negativity and hate. I'm hopeful that Nicole Hannah Jones, she will even garner even more followers. She has like 72,000 followers, which is a lot for you when you think about it, which is a massive a lot for an educator or intellectual. But I'm hopeful that her platform will continue to expand with these types of features and with these types of thought. And if you can't love yourself, how can you expect other people to love you? And I guess that's all the whole purpose of this. Shedding positivity on using your platform for positivity. That's what it should be all about. Sending the Clowns a Little Night Music, Stephen Sondheim. That's a departure from the rest of the podcast episode, as I celebrate the holiday season. Stephen Sondheim was probably one of the most prolific composers on Broadway, and the theater suffered a great loss in his recent passing. But it's also, his music also brings together a celebration of life. While I'm mentioning him, Karamu Wells, she passed away at 72 also this past week. The complications of multi-systems atrophy. Sounds like a neurodegenerative disorder, which is kind of hard to fathom. As she was probably one of the most innovative choreographers of Afrocentric dance in the 70s. Long life live, rest in power. Also, Jacuchi Satoshi, a 99-year-old Buddhist priest, who I'm going to hopefully be able to add in the upcoming days, an entire section dedicated to her works in Chatterbooks, where you can navigate to my online bookstore, Chatterbooks, and hopefully be able to purchase translations of one of her 400 works of art. She was infamous and known as a feminist who left her husband and young daughter earlier in her marriage, right after the war ended, World War II ended. She took a vow of celibacy, started her own Buddhist temple, shaved her head, but never gave up alcohol or meat. Or talking about feminism, pacifism, while in between translating the thousand-year-old tale of Genji, which I think I have that when I was in my Japanese phase. I have that translation in my library itself, and it went on to become one of the greatest and most sold books in her history, and became a great classic as the world's basically first novel in a celebration of life of the Buddhist priest, Jacuchi Satoshi. May she also rest in power.
What do you say up there? I see it all. It's like a movie in my head that plays and plays. It isn't just the bad things I remember. It's the whole damn show.
I know y'all know what that is. A Charlie Brown Christmas. That's the Linus and Lucy remastered Vince Guaraldi trio. If you don't get up and dance to this, even if you are sad or just thinking about the scourge that is COVID and going on. Just recently, we found out about another an entire other variant that's maybe even more lethal and vaccine resistant than the current Delta variant. I'm hopeful how fast we absolutely came to identify this particular variant. We will pipe down and organize and use synthetic biology to improve upon current vaccines. I recently just got my booster shot, but would I be willing to get a modified booster that if it's going to protect me from the variant? It seems like we figure out something, and then, you know, COVID comes and throws something else in the mix. What else can you not? Unfortunately, or fortunately, this virus seems to try to outsmart us as it continues to circulate in unvaccinated people. And just so you know, the variant itself was first detected in sequence, it sounds like, in South Africa. This particular variant seems to be more present in unvaccinated young adults, like the ages between ages 18 and 25. For whatever reason, these vaccines, or these group of people, are the least vaccinated. I don't know, is it because of invincibility, or if you have to believe the news, is because they're blaming richer countries in hoarding the vaccines. I don't think that's the case. I think the vaccines are probably widely available, but there still is some misconception that this group of people don't need it. But if they would stop fussing and doing the blame game, and if it is available, get the shot before it mutates again. The only way that you can actually stamp this down or control this widespread of infection is to get vaccinated and vaccinate as many people as you possibly can. And I can't even imagine that getting so caught up or trying to politicize this fact and the ramifications of cutting off travel to and from these parts of the world where they detected it, is if that's going to be helpful. What is going to be helpful is using the forecasting and analytics to make improvements on the vaccines and getting the vaccines to people, the people that need it, before we have another outbreak, before there's another surge. Getting caught up in the weeds is not going to help anyone, but knowing, being able to trust the science and making the adjustments and helping to fight the disease, that's what's going to help fight the disease. Not this blame gaming, name blaming and finger pointing. That's what's going to truly help the disease. And I also wanted to give a nerdy shout out to Vertex Pharmaceuticals, because they've absolutely engineered stem cells that replaces damaged cells that produce insulin. There was an article today in the New York Times where they were talking about it's a company successfully engineered these stem cells to produce insulin and cured a man that had been battling type 1 diabetes for almost 3 or 4 decades. And he actually had to retire early from his job because of his diabetes being so brittle or out of control. But he was the first of this injection. The FDA just approved him, the first trials of the efficacy and safety of these, of this medication. The only downside is that he has to be on immunosuppression maybe for a lifetime with their own side effects, but he says that's still the taking the immunosuppression drugs, I'm sure, are just simple, several pills, but he says it's less onerous than the multiple injections he had to do per day to help try to control his uncontrolled diabetes, as well as the finger sticks, etc. It doesn't mean that he's not still going to have to watch his diet. It still doesn't mean that they're going to have to watch multi-system function because of the immunosuppression. But at least he is untethered from an insulin pump or from having to do, as I said, multiple injections, as well as multiple finger sticks to check his blood sugar levels. But now they got that Duo where Dexcom, where you can actually just put the little sticker on your arm and then scan it. Still kind of invasive, and it also makes you still stand out that you have diabetes, but if there could be a potentially safe cure, why not? And as I said, that's Vertex Pharmaceuticals. They have the rights to produce the medication, and probably it's going to be a gazillion dollars, because Vertex has been always on the hook for these novel therapies, but they are extremely expensive, and I'm sure they're going to want to recoup the $750 million, $800 million that they also paid the researcher that came up with the particular drug itself. Some days I think I'm in the wrong business. But that's neither here nor there. But it's pretty dope when you think about science and all of the advances. I know I do have a cousin with type 1 diabetes. I do know of an extended family member. Her in a church that I used to belong to, She had a kidney, kidney pancreas transplant, and how this would have been, this infusion of stem cells would have been so beneficial and definitely less invasive. But I'm wondering, if they use these genetically engineered stem cell transplanted in, by using the same theory, why couldn't you gather stem cells from the individual patients, turn on and transform them like CAR-T, basically use like their own stem cells, you gather up their stem cells, genetically modify them, and then infuse them back into the patients so that they will become islet cells. That would also keep them from having to go on immunosuppressive drugs and the body won't attack it because the body would recognize those cells as its own. But if you have to use outside donated stem cells, that would have them to have to also be on these other very toxic immunosuppressive drugs. I think that would be kind of brilliant if they could actually gather up the each individual stem cells and just use your own stem cells and get them, those stem cells, to basically produce the insulin that you're missing. That would be dope. And maybe that is going to be the second phase, taking these patients and getting them and then going from there and then reapply instead of having to use donated stem cells. That would be crazy, crazy, crazy dope. More of the peanuts while I go into this next and final section of the podcast. This idea for this section Santa Claus and when did Christmas become the thing that it is, I was able to, and I started this basically stemmed from a conversation that I had. I have allied friends, white friends. We were sitting around talking during Thanksgiving, and she just made a kind of offhanded remark about Black Santa Claus and how we're seeing more and more of the rendition of Santa Claus. It seems like Santa Claus is becoming more melanated. And me and my stupid self, I was like, you know, just for kicks and giggles, there are no Tyrones or Leroys up at the North Pole. If you think of the real origination story, he would be melanated though, but he has been whitewashed, just like a lot of other things and a lot of other holidays in our white racist society. But when you think about it, the North Pole and who is actually up there, it ain't some white dude with round white dude with round cheeks and red cheeks and skin with, because he got eczema. It's probably an Inuit or an indigenous person with some melanin in his skin. And he don't exactly look like me, but he definitely don't look like some white dude from Belgium or even from Norway. I'm just saying. But the Santa Claus looks and is a reflection of whatever society or whatever group seeks to portray him. What about Christmas itself? The concept of Christmas stems from a pagan tradition that celebrated the winter solstice, when it was an outlook for a time where either the crops were going to start growing again, where you could have more meat so you could have more slaughter for next year, where the days would get longer and there would be more time for sunlight, which I think is absolutely amazing. But the concept of sheep herders or shepherds herding anything in the dead of winter is just crazy. It's more likely that Jesus Christ was actually born during the spring, and that's fine. But also, let's be real. Jesus of Nazareth probably was a Tyrone from Nazareth. He had melanin also. Also, the original Santa Claus, Saint Nick, he was a monk in Turkey that gave away all of his earthly possessions and helped the poor and became the patron saint of the sick, afflicted, and the sailors. He was a brother, though. Melanin, again, from that part of the world. All you got to do is realize that you could get distracted by some of these origination stories and where did these traditions come from, but look at where the traditions were actually started, and you can get into the details about the representation. And it's okay to represent and have your Christ and even your Santa Claus reflect your culture and where you are. And don't downgrade or deride someone else's reflection of the same thing, is the point. And you can look into how all of these things started. For example, Christmas as we know it today is not what Christmas really was when it was first conceptualized by Pope Julius back in 336 AD. It was a celebration, and they were trying to co-opt to steer people away from the pagan winter solstice celebrations and getting them to celebrate the birth of Christ. Same difference. It was a new beginning and a subversion of the new world order. It resembled more of a Mardi Gras with the crowning of the king of misrule. Then it took on, it was deleted with the Puritans and the overthrow of King Charles II. And then it became even why it was left out, and it didn't become a federal holiday here until after the Civil War, when we needed to celebrate because, again, like it is now, our country was so fractured after that war. But the Puritans and the pilgrims that came over here basically deleted Christmas for almost 200 years before it became the federal holiday that it is now. And then when we made it, put our American stamp on it by incorporating several different traditions into making it definitely the United States creation that it is today. And when you think about this need for becoming a nationally recognized holiday, it's because we were emerging from the debacle that was the Reconstruction. We were emerging from a financial ruin, a financial collapse that was reflective of the instability of our systems right after that particular war. In certain parts of the country, it's celebrated slightly different. Again, wherever they're from Africa, African tradition, indigenous traditions, or from the European continent. The whole idea of Christmas carols and decking the halls are truly an evolved American tradition. Some places more focused on family, but also in places where people don't live with their families or don't have a traditional family. They can be, it's all about fellowship and the great sacrifices of this, our God, or whoever you choose to believe in, or whatever you choose to believe in. But it should be a reflective time of re-giving, being joyful, being helpful, and just being a blessing to other people. You don't have to put up a tree. You don't have to make your house into a Griswold Christmas and still be extremely happy. And I think that's the whole point of me me doing the podcast. And just loving life and being happy to be alive. There are certain things. There are certain things that happen in life. I mean, we're living right in the middle of a pandemic. Restriction on travel. Who knows? We may be headed to a semi-lockdown. I'm not sure. Another implosion of the market. I'm not sure. But what I am sure of and more happy about is the opportunities that I'm given every single day to create and to do something different and to, again, make a creation, hopefully, that continues to build upon and is a better than the last time I made or produced a podcast and published it, from the last time I made a blog post and published it. And why not? We just emerged from Thanksgiving, and it was a great Thanksgiving. I had great food and great fellowship with my friends. I'm always wondering, why do people like me? And I'm finding out that when I'm at peace, I reflect that, and that's what draws people to it. But when I'm closed off, I don't want people to be around that, because that's not a better version of myself. I don't have to be entertaining. I can be entertained and we can vibe, but we don't always have to be together. We don't always have to vibe and still be happy. I don't need the drama. A lot of people don't need the drama. We can listen to music, enjoy great food, and continue to expand our minds and learn something from each other. You don't have to put down anybody else to do it. You don't have to be demeaning or hurtful. And you don't even have to be altered in any kind of way. You just can be. And how great that is. If you like to share, and you would like to share in the glow, I guess you would say, navigate to my online store through the Dale's Angels Inc. blog, and you can purchase the merchandise and let me know about anything else that I can actually get for you. This is now that it's getting into this cold weather, these fleece jackets are going to come in handy, as well as the long sleeve t-shirts and Monogirl. I still have several of those shirts left over. I'm thinking about another spicy saying that I think you guys will like also. Also, to get the latest and greatest thing, a reflective book on my Chatterbooks bookstore, or just drop me a note, let me know how I'm doing, as well as other topics that you would like to hear about. I'm always hopeful for positivity and shedding light to all of us, so we can all be positive and we can all seek the joy. Seeking your own joy and being joyful is a guarantee for a happy life. Always. Take just a moment to be kind to your mind, and then you will receive kindness. And I hope you enjoyed this episode as much as I've enjoyed creating it. Y'all have a great Sunday, okay? Bye.